Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It is a dark day around Bucks Nation, a doozy of a Game 5 in the first round series against the Miami Heat. The Bucks meltdown, lose in overtime. They lose a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter. And for the second game in a row, it's a hefty lead that disappears, and the Miami Heat win the series in five. The Bucks are the first team, the first number one seed in the modern playoff format to lose to an eight seed in five games or less. The 16 points, I believe, is an NBA record for a playoff clinching game, a fourth quarter deficit overcome. Jimmy Butler was very good again, but the Milwaukee Bucks were really something, and we will have to talk about that again. Joining me, as always, is Lori Nickel and Jim Ozarski, both beat reporters for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, covering this Bucks team. They have been here for the duration of this very brief run, through this year's playoffs. And Jim, I'm going to start with you. And just off the top, trying to summarize what went wrong is a very difficult thing. There are a lot of things that went wrong, and I don't know how you see it. If there is one or two things you can point to say, if this hadn't happened, we might have seen a different outcome. You know, when you have five games in a row and all of them have their flaws, obviously the four losses in particular, like, it starts to feel like this maybe was actually kind of inevitable. But what would you point to for this game specifically, for game five, but also the series? What are the things that you're going to go into the offseason and being like, well, that's what went wrong, and they're going to have to do something about that going forward?
Wow. Yeah. I know what went wrong. I don't know how they address it. So we'll
stick with what went wrong. We'll worry about the addressing in a minute.
Yeah. I mean, look, when we wrote our three reasons why the Bucks would not win a title this year, one of them was they will turn the ball over because they were one of the worst teams in the league at that. And in four losses, they turned it over 61 times for 88 Heat points. We wrote that they would not make free throws, as they were one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the league, also independent of Giannis, although he is clearly a big part of it. And guess what? They shot 45 free throws and missed nearly half of them. For the series, they only shot 70% from the free throw line. And that clearly reared its head in game five. So those are the two things. How those are fixed, I'm not sure, but that will stick out to me as big reasons why they lost in five games. There is the Jimmy Butler thing, and that's sort of an aside. Like, the Bucks have been a victim to that also. If you look at Kawhi Leonard in 18-19, Jimmy Butler in the first couple of games of the bubble, they've been susceptible, to the big moments from big players. But again, that's sort of the greatness of others, right, that you can't control. So for me, I just look at this team lost six times, from mid-January until April. They lost four times in a week and a half. And all of, like, those key things of why they lose and when they lost happened time and time again. And unlike the regular season, they never were able to bounce back and not do those things. Credit to the Heat to a degree. But I'll go back on that. There are some individual game moments, of course. We can get into Mike Budenholzer decisions and
yes, we will,
things of that nature, because that's fair. But, like, overall, that's my impressions of the series that were controllable, so to speak, outside of injury, outside of Jimmy Butler. I guess to a lesser extent, like, trying to defend Jimmy in a different way. But again, it's the free throws, the turnovers that really, really stick out to me over four losses.
I do think the free throws are one thing we did not discuss maybe that much over the course of the year. But particularly for Giannis, the percentages had gone back down. He really seemed to have found something, and then whatever corner he turned, he backed out of. And that, I don't think, I mean, people know that the 17 of 19 performance in the NBA Finals Game 6 in 2021 was a huge factor, but I don't know if people really think about that enough, that was an unusual performance from him. And without it, I don't know if they win Game 6, and obviously they wouldn't be favored to win Game 7 going back to Phoenix. So it's one of those interesting sort of data points that I've always thought about quite a bit. And here we had the reverse of that. We had him just being unable to hit. He was hitting 50% of his free throws, and then they go to overtime. You know, all he has to do is hit a couple more of those, and it may be maybe is a different outcome. Lori, one of the popular ways of looking at this is whether the Heat won it or the Bucks lost it. I personally fall on one side pretty crisply on this, but it might be my own bias. I don't know. I think if you're the one seed and you lose in five games, you lost it, guys. But the Heat, like Jim said, Jimmy Butler was special. They scratched and clawed through foul trouble and injuries and losing Tyler Hero. They made it work for them. What do you think about that? Do you feel like this is a true, just straight up disappointment for the Bucks, or it happened to be that they ran into maybe a little bit of a buzzsaw with the Miami Heat?
I thought Jim made some really excellent points, and I hear your point as well. I'm kind of obsessed with what Giannis Antetokounmpo said in his post-game conference. One of the quotes he said was that, you know, the Miami Heat were playing to beat the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Milwaukee Bucks were playing to win a championship. And you don't want to overanalyze some of these things. These are fresh comments. Sometimes guys just, you know, they got to give a quote. They got to give an answer to what's been asked of them, but this was kind of a stream of consciousness quote from Giannis, and that's what I find to be really interesting. What does he mean by that? Did he not like the approach leading up to, you know, they had a lot of time off? Did he not like the approach leading up to this series? You know, did he not like that there were not enough adjustments made? I think, to me, though, here's something I've been also obsessing about for the last 3 days. Because I've covered all these teams, you know, Kawhi Leonard killed the Bucks in 2019, and that was a pretty good team back then. They were winning by an average of 12 to 10 points per game and carried that over into the bubble pandemic year. So Kawhi Leonard in that series, six games, had 179 points, almost 30 points per game average. And then last year, you know, the Bucks ran into a really talented Boston Celtics team that had a lot of depth, but Jason Tatum led that scoring charge, and he had 193 points in seven games. So that's almost a 28 point game per game average. Now compare that to what Jimmy Butler did. Five games, 188 points, 37.6 points per game average. That to me stands out as like one of the greatest performances probably in the last, since the Jordan era, as far as playoffs. Didn't matter what they did to him. They couldn't stop him. So to me, you know, the Heat won this, the Heat stole this, with a lot of other, you know, observations and analysis that we could give you, but Jimmy Butler stole this championship from the Bucks for sure.
Yeah, Lori. So what's interesting about Giannis's quote, "We were looking to win a title, they were looking to beat us." So it you get breadcrumbs along the way, and when they're in it, it's like how do you tie it together, and you can't really until it's over. So after game one and after game three in Miami, every Bucks player that we spoke to in the locker room said that they were not matching the Heat's intensity. And okay, so that's a very sports cliche-ish generic thing, right? Like, well, the Heat are playing hard. Not that we're not, but like we're not, it's not the same. And like they were having a hard time articulating that. You know, I sat with Javon Carter and Jay Crowder in particular for a little while before game four even. And they're just saying, hey, like it's playoff basketball. Like we need to match that from the very beginning and not sort of understand it later, because it's too hard against this team to like ramp it up. And Pat Connaughton and Brooke Lopez before game four, same kind of thing. And again, so it sounds like cliche-ish, right? Like, what does that mean? But then when it's over and you hear Giannis, who uses his second language far better than I use my first, put it together in that way, like that all makes sense now. Like what they were saying. And look, they insisted, they were asked, like, did you overlook this Heat team? One of the worst offenses in basketball. Like, barely made it. Like, they had to win a second play-in game. Like, they've played 90 games already.
They barely won that game. They won it eventually, but, like, the Bulls were winning with, like, 2.5 minutes left.
Right. So, it's – they insisted they didn't overlook them, but – When you string all of that together, Laurie and JR, it's hard for me to say that they didn't, that there wasn't an element of it's the first round. Let's just, you know, show up and get and move on. And they clearly couldn't get out of it. I mean, we're talking about right. comments these guys were making after losses in games 1 and 3. And then collapses in games 4 and 5. Like, I think they answered the challenge early on in games 4 and 5. Like, they didn't come out, you know, treading water or in slow motion, but they clearly finished that way. And it just felt like, you know, in terms of last year, game 6 in Milwaukee against Boston, like, they didn't have the same desperation, that the Heat had. And, yeah, so I think, and yes, Jimmy Butler was, I mean, to me, it's a better performance than Kevin Durant's from 2 years ago, which is saying something. Yeah. So there is that, and that's part of it. But yeah, I think Giannis articulated very well what was clearly being felt and even said to a degree in the previous losses.
But okay, so I have a couple thoughts on that, though, that I would say that 2 years ago, they also focused on a championship over individual. I mean, and maybe that's not necessarily true because, you know, they get into that first series with Miami and people are a little worried about that matchup and they sweep them. So there's definitely they showed up for that series unquestionably. But like everything over the course of the year was designed toward a championship. You know, they got the 3 seed. They weren't putting their foot on the gas. They were resting guys. They were slowly but surely adjusting their defense. Everything was about the long game. And I realized the playoffs is kind of the line where you draw and start saying, okay, it's not the long game anymore. It's advanced past this obstacle. But I feel like there's some success in the formula of approaching it from a long-term play. And you alluded to this. You know, that's fine if it's a one and done and you didn't come to the one and done prepared. But this was there were 4 out of these 5 games. They were either gassed or, you know, in these last 2, they had a lead in the fourth quarter and they couldn't hold that on. Like at that point, they've done enough and they just all they have to do is finish that way. And it's impossible to really sort of articulate what went wrong there. Like they didn't just turn off the switch and say, well, now we're back into relaxing, look ahead to the next game mode. They just stopped making shots. They stopped doing anything. They turned the ball over a million times. Like it's just so baffling that all those things seem to just coagulate like that. It was just, I don't know. I'm sort of freestyling off of all that, but I don't know. Lori, were you going to jump in and say something else?
Well, I think, what's the saying? Death by 1,000 paper cuts?
Yeah.
I think this series, it was death by 1,000 Miami Heat screens, digs, pushes, shoves.
Sure.
You know, like they would, you know, walk right in front of Drew Holiday, who's lining up for a free throw, kind of like this alpha male, you know, yeah. I mean, all these little subtleties that we don't really notice because we're way up in the press box and the TV doesn't show up because you're at the mercy of whatever the cameraman is focused on. But to me, I saw so many of these little, you know, it wasn't just putting your hand on somebody to guard your guy on an inbounds. It was constant pushing, shoving, physicality. And if that's desperation, maybe, but I think that's just how Eric Spoelstra coaches and Miami Heat embraces that identity. And we should look at all the things that went wrong from the rotation to coaching decisions to missing shots and all that. But I think ultimately when I look at this, and I'm going to rewatch all of these games this summer, but to me, it came down to if that's an effort thing, what you were pointing to, Jim, that's what I'm curious about. Or like, did the Bucks not really take the Heat seriously, or were the Heat just so pesky and so pestering to the point where everybody on the Bucks was bitching and complaining to the referees every trip down the court? It was getting annoying. Like, Is that effort, or is that just a style of play that the Bucks aren't used to? A high-scoring team that has some finesse to it may not like having hands all over you all the time, every minute of the day. That was a big issue for me in this matchup, a clash of style of play.
Right down to maybe the most important play in this entire series, which is Kevin Love getting in front of Giannis Antetokounmpo in game one. And, you know, drawing a charge, or it wasn't actually a charge, it was a block, but still, like, getting in the way and causing an injury. I mean, obviously that's not necessarily the goal of this, but like you're talking about, Laurie, just being annoying, roughing guys up, making sure that they are tentative the next time they have that opportunity. Because at the end of game five, I think we saw some all-time tentativeness from the Milwaukee Bucks on offense. They looked either, again, very tired, very tentative, guys just not taking shots. And I want to talk about this final possession from hell, basically, where they have 6 seconds left to get a game-tying or game-winning shot off. Giannis falls down with 5 seconds to go. Mike Budenholzer had 2 timeouts to work with. He did not call one. And Chris Middleton had the ball at one point, kind of faced a double team, dribbled it back out. It ends up in Grayson Allen's hands, who I think there's no scenario where any of us thought Grayson Allen would be the guy to have the ball with the season on the line, especially driving, because he realizes there's an opening there. So he starts driving to the basket, but he runs out of time on his way to the basket, does not get a shot off, which he missed anyway. So I've seen some negative stuff toward Grayson, which I think is silly. I mean, I'm sure he didn't think he was going to have the ball. You can understand why he wasn't reacting quickly the way, why would he have the ball in that situation? Just the craziness of not calling a timeout there. Now, Coach Mike Budenholzer defended that decision after the game. He felt that he liked the rhythm of the moment, and he thought that it was a time to save that time. Well, save the timeout is a silly way to put it, but he wanted to let the action do what it was going to do. I don't understand how that happens when Giannis falls down. Once Giannis is out of the play, call timeout, geez, reset the wagons, figure it out from there. But that's not what he said. So Jim, that final possession, just take me through it from your point of view and what you would take away from that.
Yeah, on one hand, I don't have a problem with the no timeout after the basket with 7.3 seconds left. Like, that's, the Bucks never call timeout, and that is, and they've won plenty of games. Like, Grayson Allen, guess what, has won a game sitting in the corner in Toronto as Giannis drives the ball up. Yep. And so, like, in the broad scope of things, I don't have an issue there. But you're right. Once Chris, and it's not even so much that once Giannis falls out, because he started the set. And honestly, you want Chris taking that shot or getting fouled?
Sure.
So to me, JR, I think once Chris stopped, and I don't know the time on that, it might have been 4 seconds.
Still, that's an eternity. 3 seconds is an eternity.
Yeah, once Chris didn't go up with it, I think that's when you call timeout. But again, we're talking about split-second decisions. So in retrospect, maybe you call timeout because it is different than normal. You want to run a set. You want to run an inbound, which, let's be honest, some of those inbounds weren't the cleanest. Also, that was the one. And Grayson, look, I kind of feel bad for the guy. Like, I don't – unfortunately, he was one of a handful of guys that didn't stick around to talk. I'm sure he's feeling it, you know, because if you watch that, there is a lane there. Like, he made the smart basketball decision. Mm-hmm. Just the bad one was not just pulling up and floating it up, as opposed to getting maybe caught in between. But whatever, like, that, Grayson Allen's that's neither here nor there for me. I have to go back, JR and Lori, to the end of regulation when Mike Budenholzer swapped out Pat Connaughton for Brook Lopez right before the play was run. He had a timeout available. I think the Heat expected a timeout. And Bud said after, a timeout should have been called there. It's like, well,
that was on you.
Well, this happened in front of your bench. So I don't know, I don't know about that, man.
I ask you a question about that? I wonder, so Shaka Smart, the coach at Marquette University, won the Big East tournament in regulation or the Big East regular season on a play on the last game of the regular season by not calling a timeout and saying, yep. So is that a trend now? Do you guys think that's, I feel like I'm seeing that more and more, not just at the college level, but at this level, that the coaches are just going to let it free flow because they think that's more dangerous. It's like the fourth down in football where you go for it because you shouldn't. And so you catch everybody off guard. Same thing with not calling a timeout. Are you seeing more and more of that? You too?
I think it's, I don't know if I see more of it. I think it just depends on the coach, Lori, and the team. Like, I think the Heat always call timeout, but they don't have the dynamic downhill playmakers that the Bucks do. I can't pretend that I know a whole lot about Marquette. In terms of watching their style, but based on what Ben Steele writes and what I've heard, it seems like that would make sense to me that you want those guys running and playing. To me, JR and Laura, I think the timeout issue fell in the end of regulation.
Agreed.
And
for sure.
It's a basketball decision. I get it. There are no bigs on the floor for Miami. A three-pointer wins the game. Do you want Brook Lopez chasing Max Strus to a corner, either running forward or running backward? I get it. What if that happens and they lose? What are we talking about? Oh, my God. It's like Grant Williams. They left that guy open, right? Or it's what happened, which is, oh, my God, Jimmy Butler got the ball and was able to win it. So I get it in retrospect. I think once they saw the stack, like Strus and Butler in the paint, they should have called timeout and maybe put Lopez back on the floor. And I think I'd trust, not that Pat doesn't try hard, but I'd almost rather have Max Strus trying to hit a catch and shoot, probably fading away three over Brook Lopez than what happened.
And I mean, we should point out it was a very difficult shot, a very difficult execution coming out of the out of bounds play at the end of regulation to make
Jimmy
that happen.
Made a hell of a play.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that had every chance to totally miss.
Of course.
Without a doubt.
Yes. And I think if I had to guess, and this is pure speculation, if I had to guess, even though there was a little time left on the clock, it was just the craziness of the moment that maybe the coaching staff thought that was a true buzzer beater or were frustrated that Jimmy Butler was not called for a foul or whatever. But like there was some level of distraction there, because otherwise, of course, you call the timeout and advance it with it possibly as much as a second left when they go back and look and see how much time is on the clock at midcourt. I mean, you're not going to score from a full court run on that play. So and he admitted it, like you said, but not a lot of explanation as to exactly what happened. I definitely think we're going to be talking about that for a long time. Yeah, I agree. The regulation is the bigger miss. It almost, to me, informs what happened at the end of overtime. It's like you've already messed this up once. Just call the timeout. Like I hear what you're saying, that there, it's defensible to have not called the timeout. But, you know, having just screwed this up in regulation, call the timeout in overtime so that you can at least say you got a set for someone at the buzzer and got a look, you know, because you're the fifth guy on the floor, euro stepping before as time expires is going to live forever. It's just a really rough finish.
Yeah.
Good point.
And that's the thing. This is like when we talk about, and Lori's covered so many football games as well that have come down to last second, what have you's, and that's never like one play sticks out in your mind, but it's never the one play, right? Like, we address the free throws, we address the turnovers, but Lori hinted at this, like, okay, the Bucks, like, Mike Budenholzer tightened his rotations down to essentially eight players. Mm-hmm. Jay Crowder essentially DNPs in games 4 and 5. Bobby Portis and Joe Ingles essentially non-factors in games 4 and 5. I don't understand how a very small Heat team like that they weren't put in a position to just use their size. Like, Brook Lopez and Giannis Antetokounmpo ran some of the prettiest two-man game pick and rolls in game four that were just unstoppable. And I don't think I saw a single Giannis and Brooke pick and roll in game five. Yeah. I don't think I saw Giannis as a screener in game five. I don't believe Bobby Portis was put in a position to, now he's not really their two man game guy, but like he's probably their most consistent straight up post player. So instead of Giannis playing 12 minutes of a fourth quarter and he's settling for threes and 20 footers and 15 footers and 10 foot hook shots, how do you not maybe give him a breather while Butler's on the bench and you run two-man game with Brooke and Bobby with either Chris and Joe or Drew? You know, like those decisions ring just as loudly as what happened in the final moments of game five.
And to that point, Giannis was gassed in the fourth quarter and in overtime. And I mean, he'll probably ultimately be the first to tell you that the stat line might tell you some things, but that was one of his worst performances overall, given the stakes. Obviously, the free throw shooting had a lot to do with that. But he was, you know, he's hurt. We know he's hurt, so that's a big part of this too. And he was just exhausted, and that seemed to seem to be a problem coming down the stretch. So go ahead, Lori.
One thing too, after game four, he needed an IV. He needed IV treatment, that was reported.
Right.
So I would not call that his worst performance, but everybody needs to keep in perspective what he was doing.
Of course, he definitely was, you know, it's out of his control to some degree. He definitely was tired. You could tell he wasn't the only one. I thought it seemed like everybody was a little bit tired. And Jim, so some of the stuff you're talking about with Budenholzer in general, you know, this is the second time that Eric Spoelstra, who is, you know, I don't think Spoelstra gets the credit, enough credit for how great he is as a head coach. I think his legacy is tied to LeBron in some ways, but he is second longest tenured coach in the NBA and just really, really good at this. He had a great series. I mean, all the buttons he pushed seemed to work out. Obviously, the outcome speaks for itself on that front, and that's the second time now that he's beaten the Bucks as the lower seed. One was in the bubble, count the bubble if you will, but certainly this seems to sort of back up what was possible in the bubble. Of course, the Bucks won the series against the Heat in four in between. But a lot of comparison there, saying that Mike Budenholzer did not stack up to what was going on the Heat sideline. And I'm not just talking about fans yelling into the void. I'm talking about some national writers like Kevin O'Connor, for example, the Ringer, who covers basketball very closely, had a lot of pointed things to say. Mike Budenholzer is going to take the brunt of this. And probably deservedly, I don't know. I mean, there's so much blame to go around. But there's going to be a lot of questions about his future in Milwaukee. I would say that given the fact that there's a little bit of an ownership change, and we talked about this on the last pod, the ownership change, we don't really know what they're thinking. We can assume there's some rubric that owners use to decide when or when not to move on from a head coach. The fact is, it's really up to what the owners want. It's their whims, essentially, and they may feel that's completely inappropriate to do at this time. They may feel like it's absolutely what they're going to do. We have no idea, and any real like speculation is going to have to take that into account. But for as much criticism as he has received, how much of that is deserved? And you know what, Lori, I'll start with you on that. How much of what Mike Budenholzer got over this series is deserved, and how much is just trying to find a point person to blame when there is just so much to go around?
I think this is tough because reporters, and certainly not fans, were not in those strategy meetings. We're not in the film session. We don't know when the Bucks are going to choose to crash the offensive boards and when they're going to haul ass and get back on defense. We don't know what some of these scenarios. I know that one of the questions I have about Budenholzer in this series in particular is the rotation, particularly like, you know, squeezing out some of the guys that have been playing all year. And I'm not saying it's an easy decision. I'm just saying I have questions. You know, the Heat had Love, Lowry, and Bam Adebayo fouled out, you know, and yet the Heat's bench outperformed the Bucks bench for the most part because the Bucks bench didn't see much time. And if it did, it was inconsistent. Pat Connaughton doesn't play game one, and then he squeezes in there in a couple of other games. So I would ask, you know, Bud, like, and I don't know that you would get a truthful answer, just because John Horst signs Jay Crowder doesn't mean that the coach wants to play Jay Crowder in certain situations, or to have Jay Crowder go in there and also defend people and foul them and collect those fouls and absorb those fouls so that other guys can play freely like Chris Middleton or Giannis. So I think one question we can ask about Mike Budenholzer and his job and what he did is how he decided to work with this rotation. That's been a struggle all year. They've had a lot of different lineups. But the other stuff and the timeout stuff, you know, that's interesting. I think what, and I hope, Jim, you talk about this, Jim's question to Giannis last night about, you know, would you like to defend Jimmy Butler more? That's going to get a lot of attention. And I think it's a little bit, we need more context for that answer. You know, Giannis told you, Jim, that yes, he would have liked to have defended him more. But the fact is that Giannis Antetokounmpo has missed games because he had a back contusion and he fell and he's being treated and he, you know, delayed coming back to Milwaukee in Miami a couple of days ago getting IV treatment. So how do you say, hey, Giannis, go play your most minutes ever in the playoffs while you're dealing with this injury and go guard the guy who's putting up 50 a night? Like, I just have more questions about that, but I think that's something that a lot of people are going to concentrate on, and I would love to hear your feedback if you have any on that as well.
It is so funny because he took so much criticism for not playing Giannis enough in that first that run in 2019. It's just so funny. Like, it makes me wonder, can he avoid the criticism at all? Like, is there really anything he can do? But Jim, I want your thoughts on that question as well.
Yeah. I mean, Bud is going to take the brunt of this because that's just, it's natural. You know, there are a lot of roster decisions to be made, and John Horst is in charge of that. But invariably, like, we ran through a bunch of coaching decisions, things we didn't see. You know, you're right, Lori. Like, we don't know what they felt about Jay. And JR knows this. You guys both have been on the podcast with me where I said this whole time, there might be series where Jay Crowder doesn't play because of the matchup. Right. I'll be honest. This is not one of those series. I thought, physically speaking, Jimmy and Jay kind of fit. Like, I don't know if, you know, even New York, Julius Randle, like, there's a fit there, but Boston, I don't know. You know, like, so I'm a little surprised. But to Lori's point, maybe the Bucks saw enough that they thought that couldn't work. And again, Jay, when we did our last podcast with JR, I mean, Jay Crowder had his turn in game one and Jimmy Butler cooked him. And so did Joe Ingles and so did Wesley Matthews. And Giannis got some in game four. So I guess the issue there, Lori, is not so much, you know, what Bud saw or the coaches saw. I think what they did didn't work and wasn't working. And on the last podcast, I said to JR, it's like, it's Jrue Holiday. Like, it's the best individual defender in basketball. And on one hand, I'm okay with that. Like, you're losing with your fastball. But the problem, I think, in game five is Jrue wasn't throwing 99 with movement anymore. No. Like, it looked like a flat 93.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the coach needs to help his guy.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Yeah. And Wesley, and look, Wesley did some of that. Wesley, I mean, oh my God, like, if they win, there's a huge story on Wesley Matthews here. Huge three, a couple turnovers on Jimmy.
Playing
hard. You know, but again, I don't know if that clearly wasn't enough. Clearly wasn't enough. So, yeah, Lori, you're right. There's always that broader context. There always is. But I guess, like, when you have a historic loss coupled with a historic performance by an individual, and really nothing had been done differently against that individual, that to me is a coaching question And it leads to the broader point of, yes, John Horst built this roster. Yes, there were always compliments on the roster. Maybe there was a disconnect in the talent evaluation and the coaching and the act. Those things are all true, could be true. But it didn't happen out. Like, for those listening to this, I caught up with Jay on his way out the door. We're going to write this at jsonline.com. And Jay looked at me and he said, "I don't know what I'm doing here."
Oh, man.
He's like, "I don't know why they brought me here."
Really?
Yeah.
Well, he's not the only one.
So,
right. Wow.
You know, I mean, I don't know either. You know, obviously he feels he could have helped. Clearly, the coaching staff felt he could not. So we will see going forward where what's true there, right? Like, does the general manager in this evaluation say, "Look, I gave you 13 players who on a 15-person roster who were built for this playoff run that you were supposed to use and versatility and mix and matches and matchups, and yet you only rocked with 8, and you could argue that only 6 really had impacts in the last 2 losses." I mean, where's the disconnect?
Yeah.
There was one.
Has anybody checked in the last 15 minutes? Should I go to the internet right now and make sure that we're not hustling out of here to cover breaking news? Because I'm a little
bit. I have not seen anything like that. Well, which we can get into. I mean, screw it. We're going right into it. I don't know. Look, if there's a head coaching change, I wouldn't be surprised. But I am going to say this. Bucks fans listening are going to scream. I would also be surprised if there is not one. Largely because Wes Edens was the governor when Mike Boonehoser and John Horst were hired. And we all remember the weird messiness with Horst hiring, with Hammond departing and Jeffrey Zanuck and all this weird stuff. Right. There is a real affinity for the San Antonio Spurs organization with the Bucks. I don't believe that has changed. Maybe it has now that they've won their own title, but one of these first round teams to have lost as a 1 seed was the 61 win Spurs in 2011. And so guess what? They had a veteran coach, veteran roster, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, aging roster, lose to a hard playing. That was the grindy Memphis Grizzlies team. Not unlike this Heat team, and they run it back, and you know they get to the conference finals the next year. They get to the finals in 13. They win a finals in 14. That was the end of that era. Greg Popovich is not Mike Budenholzer, but there are some similarities there. So I guess I could see both things happening or not happening.
Yeah, I go back to the track record. Depends on how much track record you want, but they've been the number one seed 3 times. They've lost in the first round. They've lost in the conference semifinals. They've lost in the conference finals. And you can't take away a title. A title is a title, and it'll be remembered forever. And Mike Budenholzer will always be the head coach of that team and deserves all the accolades that come with that because he adjusted. He did everything people wanted him to do. He changed the way he ran his rotation. He changed his defense. It was successful. They got some lucky breaks, but what finals champion doesn't along the way? There are some examples, probably teams that just rampage. But for the most part, you need those breaks. They got them. Mike Budenholzer pushed all the right buttons. And It's just most seasons end like this, or at least 3 out of the 5, arguably 4 out of the 5 when they took a 3-2 series lead against the Celtics and couldn't finish the deal. So that I'm sure that's all part of the calculus here. Wanted to talk a little more about Giannis, specifically his post-game comments that have gone viral, and we can also bake into the fact that I'd be curious to know, maybe Jim, you could answer this, like how healthy you think he was here in games 4 and 5, and if this series truly is different, if he is fully healthy throughout. I mean, I called it his worst performance in the playoffs, but like he had 38 and 20, so I see why that sounds silly, you know, like 38 and 20. He had a triple double in the previous game when they lost in game 4. Like you just cannot lay this at the feet of Giannis. He did a lot, so it's really you know, to be critical of him, I feel is a little tough, because I think he gave it every little, like everything he had, to the point that he needed IVs and he had a back contusion. But this injury seemed to impact him more than other injuries have, at least in the postseason, including what looked like a catastrophic knee injury. I mean, he was obviously so effective in the finals in 2021 after missing a couple games. I do wonder if this is a completely different series, if he is healthy. I don't feel like it would be necessarily. Like, maybe they win a game here or there and maybe that's enough, but I don't know. I don't know. And then these comments after the game where he's talking about, is this season a failure? He pushed back against that idea. He talks a lot about the process, and, you know, he asks, all the years Michael Jordan didn't win a title, were those years failures? And makes good points about just the things that you pick up along the way that help you on the journey to the point where you do win championships. So those are two different things. So Jim, I thrown again a lot at you, but just what degree did the injury play a role in this series? And then also, what did you make of Giannis's comments afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course. He's the best player on the planet. I think they probably still lose game one when, if he plays, it just felt like that was the Heat's night in terms of their shooting percentage and all of those things. Bucks off, you know, none of the starters had played for a week and a half or something like that. I mean, maybe this goes six. You know, maybe the Heat steal one in Miami. But no, if he's healthy, if he plays, I mean, the Buck, we're talking about the second round right now.
Sure.
And I, because for as great as those raw stat lines are, he wasn't himself in either of the fourth quarters. Giannis, I think only Kyrie Irving and De'Aaron Fox scored more fourth quarter points than Giannis this year. De'Aaron Fox, clutch player of the year, it's a new award. I really thought about voting for Giannis for that award in the number three spot. You know, because I feel like his fourth quarter contributions were a little underrated this year. I don't think he would have made any more free throws, but I don't also believe he would have been settling. And I asked Mike Boonholzer if he thought Giannis was settling, and he said no. But I don't know if we see Giannis taking jumpers in the fourth quarter of an elimination game as opposed to trying to dunk on everybody. If he's not feeling it, like, he was so smart in game four. He only hit the floor twice, I want to say. Once that got him to the free throw line, it was a 3-point play. And then the non-timeout called scramble. That's not his game. Like, he's always on the floor because he's always going to the rim. That's a broader point. Like, I don't think he was healthy at any point this season for various reasons, and yet he still is an MVP finalist. I voted for him for MVP. Just shows you why he's the best player on the planet, that's what happened. So, that's a long way to say, of course, the series is different if he's healthy. Now, in terms of the comments, I feel if you're John Horst and Bucks ownership, you have to feel encouraged by that. And what I mean is, Giannis Antetokounmpo has 2 years left on his contract, mm-hmm. which in the basketball world means he only has one. He's extension eligible in September. Now, guys like him don't sign those extensions early, so I don't anticipate that. But the fact that he, in a very raw state, went there as opposed to anything else.
Yeah.
Like, LeBron James does not have that response. Right? I don't know if Joel Embiid has that response. I don't know if Kevin Durant has that response. And what I mean by that is this is all now about, will Giannis sign a third extension? The Bucks have this offseason and next season to convince him to do that. The fact that he's willing or in a headspace to understand this team was built to win a title, could have won a title, and it didn't happen for whatever reasons. But he's accepting of those reasons and understanding that it's not just we don't have a parade has to be encouraging a little bit for the roster builders and the check writers that, okay, you know, maybe he changes his mind in 4 months and he's sitting in Greece and is like, what the heck? But I don't think he operates that way. Laura, you know him well too. I don't think he fibbed. I don't think this is something that's a feeling that's going to go away. So that's my takeaway from the failure success comment, is that he had a real chance to really tighten some collars in Milwaukee.
Right.
And he did not. And he did so pretty passionately.
Right.
So I think that's what I take away from those comments.
Like, in summary, you think that was the conversation starter of, oh, you didn't win a championship in Milwaukee, Giannis. It was a failure. Now it's time to start thinking about where else you might want to go, right? Because everybody is courting and coveting this guy outside of Bruce City.
Yeah, it's coming. Damian Lillard already was on Twitter with Giannis and Blazers jerseys. Like, it's happening.
Kill me now. Just punch me right now.
Well, Bucks fans want Dame Lillard to come here.
This is the world it's in, and because of this historic exit, I'm a little surprised we didn't see a repeat of 2018-19 in some ways, but maybe that's because of things have changed with Giannis or how he feels about certain things. I don't know, but that's going to be – look, we're going to – JSL, like, we're going to have to write about all of these very hard discussions roster-wise, new CBA-wise. We won't bog people down with that right now, but it's going to be hard. But it all centers on how that guy feels about where this is going. And the fact that his first response was an impassioned conversation and feeling about, it's not just whether or not I have a ring in my hand, but it's about all of this other stuff, I think has to be encouraging if you're a Bucks fan and if you're anyone who works for the organization.
Laura, do you have any other thoughts on those comments that you wanted to dive into?
Well, I want to hear yours too. Really well put, both of you guys. You're both so smart. I love talking to you, but I'm going to say this. I loved Giannis's answer. What a shock, right? But here's the thing. In 3+ decades, I have covered these sports-obsessed, winning-obsessed people. And what has it done? It has made their lives unlikable at times. It doesn't even mean that you might be taking Vicodin to keep playing and to win a Super Bowl. I'm talking about athletes in other sports who lied about taking performance-enhancing drugs or lied to the public about, you know, they had this one public family image that was so great, and then privately it was, you know, the complete opposite of that. So many examples of that. When we are obsessed with this, it's only about winning championships, it's only about winning titles, you lose the beauty of the journey, which is the training and the practice and the camaraderie with teammates that you would actually put, you know, your life on the line for sports-wise. Like, I totally disagree with the notion out there that this is a failure of a season. We could talk about if it's a failure of defensive adjustments or rotations or coaching changes or things like that, but we can talk about individual failures. We can talk about, you know, things that fell short. But I think the thing that Giannis said is going to be something that's going to be played by athletes for like a generation. Like, this is Giannis, the philosopher, the Greek philosopher, the person I've been saving his quotes now for a couple of years. And I think that meant a lot to me because he's talked about mental health recently. And that's what you got to say. If you care about who you are as a person and who you are as a teammate, and that's how you feel about things. We've dealt with, you know, lots of other high profile athletes in our state who can't give a straight answer or an honest answer or not play games and with the media and all that stuff. And you don't get that BS with Giannis. So I respected the question and the directness of the question. I understand now with Jim, maybe some of the backstory behind why we have to hear this already, you know, an hour after the season's over. But I think the answer is something that is, you know, not, again, we shouldn't overanalyze these things. These aren't politicians. They're not speech writers. These are athletes who just had the raw moment, you know, of losing the entire season and having ended. Now they have to talk about it. That's a tough thing to do. But I think Giannis's answer was really solid, because a lot of us who love sports love the parallels between, you know, life lessons and sports, and team sports in particular, and how you can only control so much. So I thought it was really good. And I don't agree with the people who are criticizing him for not being ruthless. I covered Michael Jordan. I'm that old. I didn't cover him as well as Giannis. You know, I was just a little new intern type sidebar reporter. But I think Giannis can be proud of who he is, and he can be proud of who he sees in the mirror when he wakes up in the morning. And if that's his priority, then he said the right thing, and he's aiming to achieve the right things with those comments that he made.
I also love the answer. I love the question too. I know Eric Name at The Athletic has gotten a little bit of flack, but this is the job. You know, you have to ask these things, and he got a phenomenal response from Giannis. So I think if I'm looking at the comments on face value, I've been thinking about this. You just have to allow room for there being two different interpretations of this. There's the fan and the exterior position, the national view, the fan view, and then there's the view of the player. From a fan perspective, of course this is a failure. 2023 will be remembered for nothing else other than the first round exit. No one's going to remember 16 wins in a row. No one's going to remember any of the individual highlights, Grayson Allen hitting a game-winning three-pointer. None of that matters to people. That's it. It's a bad season. Every move that was made to get to this point was also a failure. The move to trade for Jay Crowder to give up 5 second-round picks is a failure, because they gave up a lot for a guy who did not contribute to a early playoff exit. You can have that point of view as a fan, as an outsider. As a player, it's just such a completely different animal. This is a 24-hour, you know, 365-day-a-year job. You know, one season doesn't just end. It's not segmented like it is for fans. You know, the rest of us will stop thinking about basketball for several weeks. That's not going to happen for the players and the members of this team and the members of this front office. You know, they're moving into the next phase, and they are building relationships, and they're constantly learning. And it's not as simple as saying, well, the 2021 segment of my life was amazing all the time, and the 2023 segment was terrible all the time. Like, you simply can't look at it like that when you're in the moment like Giannis is. So, of course, it's not a failure for him. How could he look at it like that? And there are players like Shaquille O'Neal talked about it, said that, you know, it would be a failure to them, and they're welcome to view that. But I completely understand why a player has to look at it completely differently, and not, you know, when he's thinking of back on his career, he's not thinking of you know, this year versus this year. He's thinking of this moment versus what we did here and how down I felt about this, but then it was so great when we were able to reach the top of the mountain a couple years later. I mean, it is just one continuous life, basically. So it's just a luxury to be able to think of it in segments like fans do, but it's a little more complicated for the people who are sitting at the podium talking about it. So I completely respect both the answer and those who think, you know, want to view 2023 as a failure. I get it. I agree, but only from one point of view, from one side of it. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a broader discourse. Like, Mike Budenholzer didn't want to use that word, but Jay Crowder did.
Yeah.
He said, we failed. So there's you know, I think there is a mental trick to that. Like, that's a hard word to say, to acknowledge. I think there's a value in understanding the context of it, right? Like, I don't think Jay Crowder is any, like, views things. I don't know. You know, Laurie, I don't know how you feel about that. Like, I think you can have perspective, and I agree with you that the weird ring culture is part of the LeBron thing created, and weirdly in retrospect was put on Michael Jordan. Like, I don't remember. I mean, I didn't cover those teams. I was old enough to watch them, read them, hear them. I don't remember, like, it was, they wanted to win, but it wasn't like this weird emphasis like it is now. You know, even Kobe, I don't think the Lakers, like, it was this thing. But yeah, so JR, like, yeah, I think they can feel that way. Jay Crowder could feel it's a failure, and Giannis may not view it that way. Expectations were not matched, and that's disappointing. And I think it's how you vocalize it, I think, is okay either way. And it's it's a historic NBA history. Like, that's just it's hard to wrap your mind around in terms of what happened, how it happened, why it happened. But again, it's really interesting. I think this Bucks team, it shows that they had a lot of grown professionals, you know, and with who are thoughtful people. And I think all of their comments, the ones who elected to stick around and speak, showed that. And yeah, I think it's, I don't know, if you're a Bucks fan, I think you could sit back and be like, wow, like, we had a pretty good group of guys to root for. Lori and I have been in that locker room. I enjoyed covering them, and I'm not really surprised to hear Giannis say it that way, Jay say it that way, and sort of all the things in between.
Sure. All right. Yeah. We are running a little long on time, so there will be another podcast, I'm sure, in the near future where we talk about changes that this team is going to have to face. We've talked about Budenholzer, but also, you know, the Brook Lopez situation, the Chris Middleton situation, the other players around the fringes, like what they realistically can do. They have no draft picks. I mean, they have them here and there, but they don't have, you know, the next several years, they're not going to be supplementing what is already here, so that's obviously concerned. But I do want to close talking about this, and Lori, I'm going to start with you. I wonder what we are supposed to think of Drew Holiday right now, because, you know, when he'll always be remembered fondly when his career is over. The steal in Phoenix is, of course, the highlight moment. But just in general, he has come up with some huge, huge moments, and he has been great for them. Obviously, he was, I think you could regard them the missing piece that took them from a really good team to a championship team. His numbers drop a lot in the playoffs. The percentages go way down. The turnovers are kind of always a little bit of a thing with him. I don't think those are really out of whack, playoffs versus regular season, but the scoring goes down, the shooting goes way down, and Jimmy Butler did cook him a couple times, which granted, Jimmy Butler cooked, as you just said, Jim, everyone on this team. So no shade whatsoever, but this was a rough series for him. And you could argue Chris Middleton too, but I guess I'd be more interested in just Drew in general right now. He's getting old, and I don't know what the Bucks are going to think about him going forward. Like, I imagine he's going to be here next year, but I don't know if this repeated situation in the playoffs where he just seems to just disappear a little bit. I don't know what to make of that, or what the Bucks will make of that. So Lori, what do you think of that?
You know, I remember asking Mike Budenholzer in 2021. What are you going to do with Drew? Because Drew was new to the Bucks team, and then he got COVID. And so then he really just did not assimilate very quickly to the team. And then they get all the way to the finals, you know, and Drew wasn't shooting as well offensively. And ultimately at the time, the Bucks really just wanted him to run the offense, and they wanted him defensively, and they wanted to just support him. And everybody to a man, from Giannis on down, stood up. I believe in Drew. He's our guy, like 100%. And so Drew didn't have to be this high scoring, you know, amazing person. And in fact, he didn't erupt in scoring until he went all the way to Japan, you know, 24 hours later and went to the Olympics. So yeah. I'm not super like crazy surprised, whatever his scoring numbers are now. I think when I think of this Heat matchup with him, though, those screens that the Heat put on him were clean. Some of them were so pretty. And this team, the Bucks, I mean, you really took pride in being unscreenable. That's something Grayson Allen talked about, Budenholzer, Javon Carter. You know, they have this great peripheral vision. They're trying to always, you know, beat that screen. But the Heat, how many times did you see Drew, you know, guarding Butler, trying to force him one way or the other, trying to get the right angle, and then boom, he's running right into a Heat body, you know, probably another undrafted guy who, you know, so they screened him quite a bit, at least from my observation. I'm not an expert on the X's and O's like Jim, but so I think that affected him. And I loved the competition between him and Jimmy Butler, and I would love to have been a fly on the wall and hear all those conversations, but I wonder if that took him out. You know, when you have to exert so much energy just to play defense, it certainly affects your offense. We start with Giannis. His free throws were short. Classic sign of a player being tired. When your shots are short, you're tired.
I mean, we've talked about that before in the playoffs, where Drew's defensive effort is the priority, and sometimes that subtracts from what he's able to do offensively. But, Jim, what do you think about that?
Yeah, look, when he was acquired at 30 years old-ish, there's a real feeling with the Bucks organization that he actually was hitting his prime. And a reference that was used for me was Chauncey Billups, who kind of bounced around a little bit before settling in Detroit and became a multiple-time All-Star in his 30s as a point guard. Kind of a rare thing. And Drew Holiday made an All-Star team this year. I voted him first-team All-Defense, third-team All-NBA. If he is All-NBA this year, that I believe would be his first. It'd be hard to say that he hasn't gotten better as a regular season player as he's hit his 30, 31, 32-year season. But to your point of the playoffs, I do think that's why the Bucks are a big three. Giannis is Giannis. He's 1 and 1A. And much unbelievably to Bucks fans' chagrin, perhaps, Chris is 2. Firmly. He's that guy to, as we started this podcast, to take that shot with 5 seconds left and win the game. To score 33 in game one when Giannis goes out. To score 17 points in the first quarter of an elimination game five to keep your team in it. Like, Drew's number three. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just in this particular series, to Lori's point, the Heat beat him up. Jimmy Butler beat him up. And, you know, 2 for 11 from three in game four. Really not as aggressive in game five with his shot. You know, yeah, you could say it's disappointing, but he's not like, but that's what the construct is. So I think you can't really separate Drew from the other two. Like, this roster is built around the three of them. And I think Giannis's absences and physical limitations, Chris going 4 for 12 in game four and missing the shots that he made in game five, you know, that it exacerbates some of the other stuff. Like, I think if Giannis plays all series, we look at Jimmy as having a great series, but it falls by the wayside in the Kevin Durant pantheon of, wow, Jimmy cooked Drew, but Drew tried really hard and made it tough all series long, right? Like, that's what we'd be saying.
Totally agree with you.
If we're talking about a second round series, so I get it. Relevant questions. There is a track record there in terms of, like, the stats. Raw stats are eerily similar across 3 years of playoff performances. But that's, I think, you know, you can't separate him from the broader context of the big three.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was just going back, looking at the game seven of the Eastern Conference semifinals in 2021, and I even mentioned this on the last podcast, but Brook Lopez not really realizing with 6 seconds left how much time was on the shot clock off an inbound and passing, triggering a shot clock violation, which allows Kevin Durant to come down and tie the game with his foot on the line. We don't think about that moment because the Bucks won the game in overtime. But if it had gone the other way, it would be this iconic, terrible moment in Bucks history. And so, to your point, it's all defined by the wins and losses. And you remember things completely differently based on the outcome. In this case, since it's a loss, everything gets colored that way. And we will certainly have more to say about this. We can talk about Bobby Portis going forward, because we didn't see a lot of him in this series, or maybe as much as we maybe would have expected. Again, the offseason questions, that's all going to be coming up on another edition of Point Forward Podcast. We have got to get out of here. I don't know if we assuaged anyone who's still smarting from this really quite remarkable series of games, this five-game series loss, but maybe offered a little bit of insight. I actually learned a lot on this podcast. I quite enjoyed this conversation, guys. So thank you so much for joining me. And any last thoughts, Jim or Lori? Jim, I guess I'll start with you first. Any last thoughts before we move on?
Well, it is all about what's next. We hit on some of that. So just... the offseason starts really early. So just head over to jsonline.com/deal. You'll see Lori, myself, oddly saying the NBA draft combine is in May. There's going to be new CBA ramifications to what the Bucks can and cannot do, which is a big deal. Again, we'll get into that stuff. Obviously, the autopsy of this season is not just a quick one. There will be a lot of reporting on that and stories to come. So just stay locked in. I know it's disappointing. We'll be back on this podcast, I'm sure, at least once or twice, if not more, and more to come on what happened and what can happen going forward.
All right, Lori, how about you?
Just wanted to thank both of you guys and thank anybody who's been listening to us. And as you know, I jumped on, I invited myself to your party. So thank you. And any comments, critiques, criticisms, message me at Twitter. I'll listen. Thank you, everybody.
The party is much better for having you on board. We will obviously continue to do this. I think for me, the thing I'm looking at now is just trying to imagine things like the draft and the rest of the playoffs. It's just like the regular season having been so successful for the Bucks again, and then the first round exit. It's like, is it really going to be a year before the next truly meaningful Milwaukee Bucks game? Because we know that they'll probably still be good enough, as long as they be honest, to go to the playoffs. It's a fascinating, fascinating is the wrong word. It's an interesting thing to think about, but we do have a lot more to discuss, and we will keep your eye out. We are at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. Just, subscribe to us. You probably already do. And you'll get the updates in your feed when we have a new episode for you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Point Forward Podcast. We will talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.